welcome to the First 7-Inch Club. This is episode number 9. We're getting up there. This is the podcast where we dig up old forgotten music by old forgotten bands on a slowly dying media format, the 7-Inch record, and then we talk about them. We use our expertise, our knowledge in the field to tell you whether or not you should also do the same and pick these records up. I am Mike, and with me is Scott.
Limp Bizkit chat begins now.
I was going to ask you if we needed to do Limp Bizkit chat, but I guess we're going to start off hot with it.
Well, do we, though? I mean, the whole world knows that Limp Bizkit is back in a big way, right? That they came back for COVID Fest Chicago and really pulled out all the taps. What did you think of Limp Bizkit? Is this your first time seeing Limp Bizkit live?
Outside of MTV, yes, it is, actually.
You've never seen a Limp Bizkit concert before?
Outside of Woodstock 99, which was what we talked about last week, I don't think I was sitting around. No, I've never seen Limp Bizkit live or anything. I've seen Korn. That's about it. That's about as close as I get. And I saw Korn before they were MTV famous, so it wasn't like, it was just like going to like a normal show now. But back then, that was still like the biggest show I ever went to. But my friend Mark, who probably does not listen to the show, I bought a VHS tape of pre-fame Limp Bizkit live shows for like a quarter, and I sent it to him, and he digitized it for me, and I finally watched it like a few weeks ago, and it's not as satisfying as I thought it would be, because they're still like playing in front of like 2,000 people, even though they're not even famous yet, and like they're still in Florida, and like they already have all the moves down and stuff, and I was really expecting and hoping for more of a sloppy Limp Bizkit of not really having their shit down yet and just like trying stuff, but it wasn't that, unfortunately. So I guess I could say I did see Limp Bizkit live.
I've seen them actually live several times.
several times.
Yeah, because they just kept ending up. They kept ending up on things. I don't remember where.
No.
Yeah, dude, they did. Because we had, like, my band was supposed to play something called, I think it was called Loco Bazooka. And it was like a Lollapalooza ripoff, and it was a real festival, and Faith No More played it and stuff. So we were supposed to be on this bill, and I was like, wow, I'm going to share the bill with Faith No More, even if we're, on the Z stage or something. And we went to this thing, and it's just like, cause I went to Woodstock 94, cause we were supposed to play that too. And Woodstock 94, we walked in and walked out and never went, we walked all the way through the crowd, got up to see, I think maybe Rollins, and I think Primus was playing on another stage, and we walked right back out while I think Cypress Hill was playing or vice versa. The mud was already happening. It wasn't my scene. I'm like, I am not letting any of these people touch me. And I walked immediately back out and never went back. And this was the same thing. Like, we walked into the festival. Limp Bizkit was playing. I think maybe, who's the band that had the toilet? Snot?
No, that was Limp Bizkit.
Oh, Limp Bizkit. Okay, so I saw Limp Bizkit when they had the toilet then, I guess. And I just didn't put it all together. They had an album called $3 Bill, y'all. And I was like, no, I'm not listening to this right now. And then my friends who were kind of more Korn adjacent, Korn friendly, because we didn't know yet.
Yeah.
It wasn't immediately evident to everybody at the time that it was that it was going to become a genre. And so some of my friends who liked Primus and funk metal and stuff like that fell in with Korn and like sort of got snookered by Limp Bizkit and then stopped after that. But they were around. They were on a couple, like, I've seen Deftones a bunch of times too, because they kept definitely showing. They were on Warped Tour. They were on, they toured with like VOD or something, I think. And they ended up on some strange places. Seen them several times. And they're not bad live. Limp Bizkit, I thought this Lollapalooza thing, they seem to be having a lot of fun. That guy, Fred Durst, he has a lot of fun. I'm kind of jealous of him having the worst resume in all of history. Like, what he does is provably terrible. He's bad at it. And he just seemed to be having so much fun. He came out dressed just like the guy who's in charge of groundskeepers. And outdid his guitarist. Like, his guitarist who comes out dressing like some sort of Battle for Planet of the Apes or something like that. Like some sort of ring wraith creature, or like a cyber goth or something. That dude, people who like Limp, if we have any listeners who are Limp Bizkit fans, like, you like Limp Bizkit, talk to me about Wes. Like, do you think it's cool? Do you think it's cool what he does? Are you excited to see the next costume he does? Is it fun? It doesn't look fun. It looks like work. It looks kind of shitty.
He was still doing the costumes when they weren't famous, when I watched the I think the VHS is like they were opening for Primus, and they were still like they were still pretty popular. Also, I don't know. Maybe Fred was having fun. DJ Lethal was definitely having fun because it was a paycheck. But yeah. Wes is. I do know enough about Wes that he is some kind of guitar impresario, and Limp Bizkit has always been beneath him. And it looked even though they were doing like a jammy set, like they were like, oh, this is spontaneous, even though it's not. He still looked very robotic, like he was just doing this as you know, neatly and as quickly as possible to get through it. So I don't know. Maybe that's just his style, though. So I don't know.
Yes, he is talented and he has a very good guitar sound, and it's a shame. It's a shame what they do. It's really a shame.
It is. It's a damn shame, and he knows it. I do know. I can say a while back I made a Rip Fred Durst shirt. He's not dead. He never was dead. But I made the shirt, and Wes Borland saw it. He enjoyed it. So I think Wes is the cooler for member of Limp Bizkit. But that's just my opinion.
Might be time to update it with his new look.
Yeah. So this is actually a show where we talk about other music besides Limp Bizkit. Before we get into that, though, I'm going to cock tease the release even more. We started an Instagram. It's at First 7-Inch Club. On Instagram, that's you just type that in. As of right now, it's just all of the scans and stuff from the episodes, so you don't have to go to YouTube and like pause the screen if you really want to read something. Now you can just go to Instagram. So it's First 7-Inch Club there. And if I know, emailing people is a kind of a pain in the ass. No one emails anybody anymore unless it's for work. I understand. And so if you have a suggestion or something, or it's just something you want to, a blurb you want to drop, just hit us up on Instagram, because that'll probably be the best way to reach us as of right now. And, but, you know, we still have the email too. That's first7inchclub@gmail.com. This is all letters for both, for everything, all letters, no numbers. And first7inchclub on YouTube also.
I'm kind of a creep about comments because I don't have much of a life. So if you comment on any of the First 7-Inch Club stuff, I'll be there. So if you really want to get at me, if you really want to make me feel bad in a public, that's the place.
Yeah, there you go. But tonight we are doing a record by a band called Admiral. And this record is called Revolving and Loading. This came out in 1991 on Ebullition Records. And I have no prior experience with this band. I was just in the record store. And I saw this record, and it has like a kind of a cool cover. And I flipped on the back, and I saw it was on Ebullition, and I was like, well, at the very least, we'll have a reason to talk about Ebullition Records, because I'm sure we have a lot to say about it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it turns out pretty much that this was actually Admiral's second 7-inch. They had 2 7-inches altogether. It seems the first 7-inch from the research I've done is just gone. No copies exist of this first 7-inch. I don't know if it suffered a fate of like a Hater of God Records fate, where a bunch of it ended up in the trash or what, but you cannot find their first 7-inch. Although they do have a discography that I think is like a Spotify exclusive. It's definitely not physical media. They might have a Bandcamp or somewhere, so you can listen to this on Spotify. They have a discography, which is the first 7-inches, and then some live tracks that you can tell they just included to pad it out, because they're very bad sounding. They're not something I would ever want to include on my discography. So outside of that, this is pretty much, I think, everybody in the band. I think this was their first band, and everybody in this band, actually, I guess, except for the singer, went on to do other stuff. Joseph, what I don't like, it's weird. I think he played bass in this band. He went on to Hoover, which was a kind of a bigger band. I wouldn't say bigger, but they were a known band on Discord. And back then, like, being on Discord was a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
So, there's that. I never listened to Hoover, though, so I know they're kind of a, you know, another kind of emo-ish band, I guess you would say. Mike, who is, again, I think the guitarist for Admiral, he was in Burning Airlines, which was a pretty big deal for a minute.
Yeah.
And another band called Forensics that I don't know. Sean is the singer, and he did nothing. He did another band called Navio Forge right after this that I've never heard of. And William was a drummer, and unfortunately, he just passed away a few months ago, which is pretty airy that happened right about the inception of First 7-Inch Club. He was the drummer. He plays guitar now, or he did play guitar for Karma to Burn, which is another never listened to him, but they still seem to almost be an active band, like 20 years later. So over 20 years later. So did you ever listen to Karma to Burn or anything, Scott?
I know, like, I know of them just because, you know, because we were in a sludgy type of band. I went on the world tour of seeing what was adjacent to our music. And you know, when I was younger, when I was younger, I didn't like, when Sleep was out, I didn't like Sleep. When Cathedral came out, I didn't like Cathedral. So, like, the kind of sludgy, slow, Sabbath-y stuff, I didn't like it when I was younger that much. I got into it a lot later. And I heard them, and they're kind of, I don't know if they're instrumental. Everything I ever heard sounded like instrumental. I don't know if there were ever any vocals. I think the, some of the other, because he's done other bands that are almost the exact same thing, like Treasure Cat and something else. He did something else. They're like, it's the same idea. It's just kind of like good stoner music, I guess. But where you're, and Burning Airlines, Mike Harp and Burning Airlines, definitely a band that really disappointed me because they had a cover that looked kind of cool for me at the time. And I had heard things about them that they were sort of like screamo emo adjacent. I was like, awesome. You know, that's my thing. And it was just, I was like, I don't get this record at all. This is bullshit. And I paid money for this. And the Hoover guy was also in the Crown Hate Ruin.
Oh, yeah. Which is, I was about to say, I missed that. The Crown Hate Ruin was the only band out of their whole resume that I've actually heard and seen before.
However, Mike, one of, of the bands we've mentioned, the one you should listen to is Navio Forge.
Oh, really?
yeah. Navio Forge. It's one of those bands that, like, their name comes up all the time, and it's easy to kind of, like, file it away with other bands whose names don't make any sense to you. Because, I like, there's a whole bunch of bands from that, like, Native Nod and, like, whatever. Like, they their names, I don't know what they mean, and they sound like summertime, like bored summertime to me or something. So I don't really, I kind of put them away. But Navio Forge is this band that sounds like Fear Factory playing Rites of Spring. It's like very heavy guitars playing kind of like, you know, like this kind of stuff. And it's like one of those blip on the radar things that was influential, like super influential to whoever ever heard of Navio Forge. It's like a name that rings out. There's a live set of this band on YouTube, at least one, at ABC New Rio. It's worth seeing. It's from this era. Singer's doing the 90s emo dance nonstop. I think there was a name for it. I'd like, you know, like a pick up the change mosh. I think there was a name for this. It's the one where it looks like you're trying to sweep ants off your body. Like there's ants on you and you're trying to like get them all off you. He's doing that. And also, there's an earlier version of this band called Homecoming. And when I say earlier, I'm saying like 87. So they're zygotes, they're fetuses at that point, and a little bit punkier. But these guys were at this for us. It's the same dudes. I think one guy was different. And you can find the whole recording. And it's not the worst. It's really not that bad. So, you know, if you just can't get enough of Admiral, I got more for you.
turns out this Navio Forge LP is very expensive. It's not on Spotify, so I'm gonna.
Multiple times on YouTube, so it's easy to hear.
I guess I'm gonna have to unfortunately listen to music on YouTube, which sucks. As I mentioned,
you don't have YouTube Red, Mike, or YouTube Pro, or anything.
No, I don't have YouTube Pro. As I mentioned, this is on Ebullition Records, which I'm sure any of our older listeners will be aware of. Yeah. What I didn't know until yesterday when I was going over the Discogs stuff, this is actually Ebullition Records number 2, which I did not know when I purchased this. I would have purchased it even faster if I knew that. That's crazy. Their first record, of course, is Downcast, which went on to, I wouldn't say fame, but I think anybody who knows Ebullition Records knows Downcast. But I've never heard of Admiral before. So, you know, I don't really have anything personal to say about the band, so I figured we could talk about Ebullition. But obviously, after a while, they kind of, you know, they built an image. I wouldn't say all of their music is the same, even though I think when most people think of the label, they think of kind of screamier, noisier music, because that's what their kind of bread and butter was. This is, spoiler alert, this is not really on that level, but, you know, they had some different stuff going on in there. They had Heart Attack Zine, of course.
Yeah.
And that was like a big thing. And Ebullition's definitely not still active, right? I didn't even check.
No, I think I think he folded later than you think. I think he made it to the late 2010s. And Heart Attack folded a long time ago. One of the only zines I actually kept up with because it was easy. And it was like, you know, about a lot of stuff I liked.
Yeah, it says they released a Downcast, what I assume is a discography in 2020, so they are still going.
Well, he was still doing distribution and stuff for a long time, because that's what That's sort of, I assume that's what the real Empire was built on, was Ebullition became this distribution juggernaut for other like weirdos. Like Gloom, our friend Gloom, Nate, I think he worked with Ebullition for a lot of his stuff for a while. And probably the reason that the first like 10 hardcore records I owned were all Ebullition, I'm sure had something to do with the fact that they had good distribution in Albany, at least.
speaking of that, that does remind me of a personal story that I can share. And at one point I did do the ad copy, I guess you would say, for Hater of God Records. Our friend John that I mentioned, and I would do all their descriptions that you would see in distro catalogs or in zines and stuff like that. And I won't mention the band or what it was, but, John wanted me to write a very problematic description for one band for this one particular band. And I did it, but then he made me write a different description for Ebullition, because he's like, they're not going to print this, so you have to do like a PC version for them. So
I wonder if I could guess which band this is.
I don't think it's definitely not a Hater of God, like when you think of the record label, a band you think of, but
I got it. I know who it is.
you guys at home, you can guess if you're a big Hater of God heads, you guess what I had to write problematic stuff for. But no, I mean, speaking of which, Ebullition was that kind of like political label, and it's weird to think about now, because at the time I was like, whoa, this stuff's kind of serious. Well, I'll get into more when we get to the record layout, but you know, it's just, and like the zine was kind of that leaning too. Zine was always cheap too. It was always 50 cents, so you could always get it. But now, like, looking at it, like, you know, with adult eyes, it just seems kind of like how, like, you go on Twitter now and there'll be like a 21-year-old and his Twitter bio will just be like anarcho anti-fascism, like just a bunch of like political buzzwords, like you know, real crazy, like extreme political buzzwords, and but the only people they ever interact with are like other people that have that stuff in their bios. Even like those are the only people they argue with. So it's just kind of like, that's what Ebullition was, I think. It was kind of just like echo chamber. And so like I never bought Ebullition records personally, because I was like, oh, they have a message. Like, obviously, Struggle, as I know, a band Scott also likes, and that had a big, you know, impact on me. But outside of that, I don't think there was ever a time I bought Ebullition records because of there was like a political message. So I was wondering if maybe you did.
Well, I like that. I didn't have any opinions. I was like very suburban, sheltered. You know, I bought it. Like, if you told me it, I bought it. You know, like I'm pretty left leaning, and I always have been my whole life. So like, if you were like, yeah, you know, like factory farming really sucks, and here's why, I'd be like, oh, that sucks. And if you're like, these broke people can't get a break, that fucking sucks, man. Like, I'm with you. I want more, but I didn't know how to pursue it. I didn't know how to act on it. I wasn't really rebellious. I did well in school, but I did like that. I liked that. I thought that was cool. I mean, I liked Napalm Death before I liked any of this stuff, and they're actually like a political band and stuff. And but yeah, I mean, this label, all the four bands that I've probably mentioned on this show, all on this label, all the 29 bands I didn't have enough money to check out, all on this label. But the zine, like, I was super into the zine, and you can find it all now. It's free on a website called heartattackarchive.com. And I read something, I was like, man, almost all the reviews are like, well, if you've heard this other band that, you know, they probably sound like this, so you'll probably like that. You have to know, you have to already know all the bands before you can read any of the reviews, because they don't help you out one fucking bit.
That's how I bought the, and I'm not knocking it because it's great, but there is a zine called Hardware, which you probably heard of. That zine was fucking everywhere. There was that one issue that Nate was in for, like, I think it was Monster X, and that was everywhere. And like, it was for years, it was just that same issue, but I bought their anthology. And I was like, oh, this is going to be sweet reading all these old record reviews. And they're all like that, because that's just how that's like how hardcore people just wrote back then. It was just like, oh, yeah, this is exactly like band A and band B. And it's just like no other description. And you're just like, oh, cool. That sounds great. Sounds like a great band.
Straight insider ask a punk stuff. You can't get anywhere. But also, people who are interested in this sort of thing, this was one of the early places that I knew of that had like a serious actual argument erupt through letters, and
yes
and it became this worldwide controversy.
Okay, I guess we could just move on, unless you have anything more to say about Ebullition.
No,
yeah. we'll go on to the
Sorry, there was a, anybody has a link for me to the Straight Edge movie from a few years ago. It's like 2012. There's a movie called Edge the Movie. I want to watch it because it looks pretty, you know, whatever. But
they have something to do with it.
Yeah, they interview Kent McClard. They actually go to his place, and I've never seen what he looks like in the flesh. So I guess there's an interview with him in his business. So I'd like to see that. If anyone has a dark web link, give it to me.
But yeah, this record itself, the packaging. First, I gotta say, looking over the Ebullition discography, I mean, they had a lot of like A level bands, but I even heard of most of the B and C level bands. So
yeah.
I didn't even ask you. So you didn't previously hear of Admiral before this, did you, or did you?
No, I never. Okay. But the name sounded familiar, but I don't know anything about him. This is my
but you
first.
Knew Navio Forge, so you knew like an adjacent band that was.
Okay. I guess I knew every other band these guys other than this one. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, even like the kind of B or C tier, like Failure Face was on Ebullition. I know them. Like even Fuel and Bleed, just like all these kind of bands that are been forgotten, but never heard of Admiral. But you know, they were very early days of Ebullition, even though they pretty much hit the ground running. Like I think all of their first few releases were a big deal. So, but this packaging itself, it's kind of like, I mean, this is 1991, and they pretty much already have their whole Ebullition aesthetic down, because it's like all of their records kind of look like this from here on out. They never really stray away from this. They had the logo down. The actual thing, which I guess Scott can't really tell because he just sees scans, but this is actually on like glossy paper stock, and it's like a trifold cover, which isn't insane, but back then it was still something. And you know, thinking about it, he was doing that zine for 50 cents for all those years, even into the 2000s. So I got to think, do you know, Scott, this guy just had full access to a print shop as soon as they started? Because looking back at it, it just seems like there's no way anybody on earth could have afforded this record label.
This is the problem with a lot of things that I was interested in my youth, is the mature web never met with young me, young, hungry, curious me. So I never look up the old stuff. But I know that it was like Ebullition literally just started off as three people, like, and it stayed not many people for a while, I think. And, you know, their cool logo, which looks cool, day one, just one of the three people, there was a woman, Kent, and some other guy, and the other guy just drew the logo, and it stayed the logo the whole time, and that basically formed their aesthetic, that scratchy, like, lowercase look. But I don't know why the stuff was so good. I don't know. I really don't know.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, you know, nothing layout wise is crazy. They're just using like, what is this, Times New Roman or something? And I mean, they would use that on a lot of records, honestly. But outside of that, it's just, you know, the hardcore pictures, and they're a little better quality than normal hardcore photos. So they had that going for them. So it's nothing crazy, but it's still like, you needed money to put this out. This record in 1991 cost $2.50 post paid. So that's nuts. Another one of the only other notable things I wanted to mention is that they do thank a pre-fame Green Day on here, I completely forgot that Green Day had a non-fame past. So that's cool to think these guys were probably friends with Green Day. Everybody else they thank is pretty normal: Downcast, Icon of Christ, Jawbox, Fuel, Fuse. All the rest of the bands from that era. But yeah, that's about it for the cover. Oh, no. I am almost forgetting the craziest part of the cover is that this also came with an insert on top of the lyric pamphlet that is the fold-out. This comes with a separate Ebullition insert on like, it's not newsprint, but it's kind of like that.
It's like recycled paper or something like that.
Recycled paper stock. And it has like I can't remember. I don't know if all Ebullition records came with this at the time, but it just says it's like an Ebullition, I guess, credo that says this is on one side of it. It says music as a product, as entertainment, as a diversion, or music as a weapon, as protest, as outcry, as expression. Music as Ebullition. This is a war on entertainment, war on complacency, war on the motion of music, war on the industry of music, music that burns the emotion, that burns the mind, that burns the system, that inspires the war. Music is more than notes and chords. Music is a tool in the hands of the artist or the terrorist or the revolutionary.
All right, dude. Easy.
So if I picked this up back then in the 90s, I would have just been like, whoa. But but now I'm just doing the jerk off motion, man. They're like, come on, dude. Like, come on, dial it down a notch. This Admiral record is not changing the world. I mean, this is not a political record. I mean, maybe I'm an idiot or something, but lyric wise, I don't think this is a political record. On the back of this, though, on the same piece of insert, is a poem. I'm not going to read the poem. It's very long. But, I don't know, man. That takes some balls to fill out a whole side of a thing with a fucking very long poem. But that's all I got. So
I think it's like when, you know, these days when someone does mail order and includes something personal for fun, and people like that, like a drawing or like, or they throw in some stickers, you know, something like that. I think this was his version of that. But yeah, I believe the poem is his. Yeah. Or so he's like, well, fuck these guys. I'm going to put my poem in the record and you're getting my poem. And I looked at it. I was like, is this lyric? What? Because it looks like lyrics. And they look like emo lyrics on top of that, because they're about, like, you know, chasing fireflies or something. Just like dumb shit. Can you tell what the cover is in person? Like, what is it?
No, I was hoping you did. I mean, it looks like it looks like something where it's like electronics, like lights or something, like light fixtures or something like that.
I couldn't tell, because it almost kind of looks like, you know, like some kind of mid-century modern countertop or like a piece of decoration from, you know, some cool 50s house or something like that. But I couldn't tell if it's LED lights. It doesn't seem to mean anything to the, which was pretty common for emo and screamo back then.
Yeah.
I think that this layout for the most part is pretty smoking, like good typography. I think the photo is pretty funny on the back. Looks like they're going to play some flag football after this, like all shirtless, all just shirtless boys hopping around each other. And there's these cool Mayan cartoon things. I don't know what they relate to, but they look cool. It kind of breaks it up. You know, it's a pretty tame layout. And then you get inside and there's these cartoony Mayan like glyph things or something. Or maybe they're from a Ziggy, a Ziggy card. It's hard to tell. But the one unforgivable crime is at the back cover, which is the thing you're going to see, actually has the stretched font. Didn't need to do that, guys. You didn't need to stretch the font, but you did, and it sucks. And it's the one, it's really the one failure on the record. Everything else actually looks pretty solid.
And you know, if you guys want to see this, you can go to our new Instagram at First 7-Inch Club and give us a follow and a like, and we will appreciate it. Moving on to the music, this is a three-track record. And this is clocks in about 10 minutes, maybe 9 or 10 minutes. First track is just one, or first side is just one track, and it is the title track, Revolving and Loading. My record player might be like one revolution slow, which is fine because I like slower music anyway, so I like I like a little slowness. But like listening to this again, it's old. This record is, you know, who fucking god knows where this record has been for the last 30 years, so you know, maybe it's a little warped, I don't know. But you would just notice out of the blue, but I think it's like, you know, a fraction too slow, but that makes it a little cooler. This was the Discogs description of this band describes them as emo, and I wouldn't say that. I don't think, I mean, maybe in 1990-91 you didn't really know what was going on, so maybe, but I think this has more of a melodic hardcore sound, or what would be known as melodic hardcore. I don't really know the history of that music. I think Social Distortion was like the first like, you know, more traditional punk band that was like, we're gonna make terrible music now. But outside of them, like, I assume Avail was a band that was just been around since the 70s. Like, they probably, I don't know much about Avail. I know they're a patch band, where if you are a person that wears patches, you're going to have an Avail patch. I've heard enough of their songs where I never felt the need to do it on all holes filled because I know I'm not going to like it because I really don't like what I've heard from Avail. But I really don't know anything outside of them just basically existing my whole entire life that I've known about underground music. So I assume maybe they started it. Maybe they started more melodic punk. I don't know. But either way, this is still pretty early on. So in my mind, I could at least think to myself that these guys really don't know what they're doing. Like, they're just kind of like, this is, we kind of have an idea of what we want to sound like, but there's no real huge precedent for it. And that lets me forgive a lot of the kind of cornier shit on this, but because I really don't know what they could have been going for an influence, because to me this sounds a lot like what would become kind of like the Long Island hardcore sound, like the Long Island, like Silent Majority, and then all the bands after Silent Majority. And you know, I like that sound in the 90s, so I have no problem with it, but that's kind of what this sounds like, and I don't think there was anybody doing that in 1991. So I don't know if that's the secret to Long Island, is that they all own the Admiral record, or these guys just kind of like hit on this somehow. But it's kind of a cool sound. This song in particular, I think, is the worst song on the record. This is throughout the whole record, but this one has a lot of it. It has a lot of word repetition, which I usually don't mind, but this song is 4.5 minutes long, and this guy has about 45 seconds worth of lyrics that he's repeating over and over again. And it's like, this song, this song really sounds like they didn't know what they were doing, because there's nothing particularly bad about what's going on, but there's a lot of it, and a lot of it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like, I think, like, there's a part where they kind of do a harmony where he's like repeating a tear it down or tear down, and it's like the music's getting more aggressive, and you're like, okay, this is it. This is the big finale. And then they just go into another kind of unrelated part right after that for another minute. And it's just like, why didn't you just end the song right there? So, like I said, there's nothing too bad about this, but I think this is way too long. He didn't have enough lyrics for it. They should have just chopped a minute off of that. But, you know, overall, so far, not impressed, but it was okay. What did you think, Scott?
Well, now we've revealed a hole that Mike needs to fill. A very incredible hole that Mike can fill when he feels like it. I think it's pretty ballsy to start your 90s emo record with a slow burn like this, because this song takes a fucking while to get going.
Yeah, yeah.
If you know what you're in for, it kind of works. Like, if you knew what this band was going to be and you knew what they were emulating. So basically, like, this is a band, they just sound exactly like the 80s Revolution Summer stuff. Like, you've heard of that term.
Okay.
Right?
Revolution
Summer. Which basically means your band kind of sounds like a rocking REM with a belligerent hardcore guy singing for you. So the guitars are less heavy, the bass is all over the place, and the singer is like just yelling the whole time. That's the sound. And these guys have it. They have a good bassist. They have some pretty distorted, pretty like abstract, less distorted guitars. And the singer kind of sings the words because he is clearly very interested in Ian MacKaye. Like, very, very, very interested in Ian MacKaye. I'm also interested in Ian MacKaye as a singer, so that doesn't bug me. But he's really doing it. And the thing you said about the repetition, I kind of, like, I heard it the other, like, I get that, but when I was hearing it, I was kind of like, I think I like this, that he just hangs on this for a long time, because it gets a little hypnotic. That's where the divider is, though. If you like this, you're like, yeah, man, that's cool. But if you don't like this at all, you're like, get to the fucking point, guy. And it happens a few times on this record. Like, that's kind of his thing, is to get like in a trance, or get like in a mantra thing or something like that, almost. But funny thing is, this band actually opened for Fugazi a few times, and I really wonder what that's like. What's that like to be on stage and watching a band that's doing you, that's it's like playing, aping you and tribute to you, just watching a dude do your fucking thing like for a half hour? What does that feel like?
I guess two things is, usually I do like word repetition in songs, but this is, I just, not this kind of music, I don't think. Secondly, it's crazy because, like, a couple weeks ago I was thinking, I was like, I need to like re-listen to Fugazi, because I remember really liking it when I was a kid, and then I just kind of like never listened to it again. But so my memory is a little foggy. I do, now that you mention it, he does sound like Ian MacKaye. But I remember Fugazi being a little more accomplished, like a little more polished than this band. But maybe I'm remembering it wrong. But I don't know. So for side B, Fit is the first song. now, you know, mentioning the Discord, which I should have fucking figured this out because half their bands were on Discord. Yeah. This is kind of more of a, these guys weren't just spontaneously creating Long Island hardcore. They were actually just aping something else. Yeah. But so this makes sense, is that the beginning, this has like a, I wouldn't say it's a slow type of intro. This is more of a building intro. And mm-hmm. I might be the only person to make this connection, but this intro sounds a lot like a more abbreviated, very prehistoric version of that one at the drive-in song. The one where he starts when he says, "I must have read 1,000 faces." That song has like this crazy good, like kind of building intro, and then he goes into that part. That's probably my second favorite at the drive-in song. All their fucking songs have stupid names, but
yeah.
And that sounds like I want to, in my head, I want to imagine, just like I want to imagine that Silent Majority had this record, I want to imagine that At the Drive-In also had this record. And they were just like, man, when we get in a band and we hit it big, when we have our big breakout record, we got to steal that Admiral part. We got to make it better. So I'm going with that story. I'm going to say Admiral, direct influence on one of the biggest records of the early 2000s, late 90s. This is a lot less scatterbrained. I think this song is a lot more. This song means business. This is good. This is a good song. It's good. It's short. It's tight. Also, I forgot to mention that I think overall my record rip sounds better than the Spotify CD version. It's the CD version or on Spotify is like compressed and you can't really hear the drums. Drums sound great on this. So fuck off, Spotify.
Yeah,
fuck
man.
Off.
You want to hear the good shit? You come to us for the the good rip.
Go to our YouTube if you want to hear this, because the digital age stinks. You need the analog. You need the analog sound for Ebullition Records number 2, Admiral. and this part, it gets it right. He does the word repetition part with the harmony with the backup singer, and then you know it builds up and gets aggressive, and then it ends. That's what the first song should have did. Mm-hmm. So I think this is. I don't know. I spoiler. I like both songs on side B, but this might be the better song. I'm not really sure. I keep flipping back and forth. But what do you think, Scott?
Well, this song is the rocker. It's like it's the rocker.
Yeah.
You better go for it in this song because you're not going to get another chance from Admiral. I can't. And this is where I noticed that I can't figure out what the lyric sheet is doing. It's like the words are on there, but it looks like they took a random number generator and just put them in whatever order they want. Nothing matches exactly. Like, you definitely see some of the words, and I couldn't really follow along. And so that, you know, skipping around a little bit in the rips, I almost couldn't figure out which song I was listening to, because none of the phrases, no phrase matches what you see in the lyric sheet. But I think this band's pretty capable. Like, these guys are capable musicians, and this is played very well. So it's cool if you like this genre. And so if you're familiar with Embrace, which is the missing piece, the Embrace record is the thing that most of this stuff sounds more like.
Okay.
This is Said Gun, Said Knife from Embrace, or For the Want Of if you're on Team Rites of Spring. The other band, they're also strongly emulated. And there's another band called Gray Matter that would be, you know, like the third piece of their tripod of basically what they sound like. But yeah, like Embrace sounds like more indie rock or something. And it's one of my favorite records. It's not like Fugazi is more kind of like experimental, weird rock and angular and maybe jazzy sometimes. Embrace is not that. It's just kind of like REME rock or something, but heavier, with Ian going bah, bah, over the top of it. That's what you're like. I've liked that since before I was a hardcoreman. Because I just I had a friend in the lunchroom who was this, like, valedictorian kid. Great. Awesome dude. And I took him for granted. Like, I should have been cooler to this kid. I was kind of like, he has glasses. I'm going to make fun of him. But he would just be sitting there, and I'd be talking about death metal and thrash metal. And he was into, like, you know, all this stuff. He was into, like, Embrace and Fugazi and all that stuff when he was, like, 13 or whatever. And he gave me the Embrace record. He goes, "I don't think you're going to like this. This is going to be too emo for you." And I knew emo meant that you fell down on the stage and cried. Didn't think that was probably going to be for me. And I was like, "What are you talking about? This record rules. This guy's just shouting. I love shouting."
The final track is called Meter and Rule. This is the second song that in a row. Also, Fit does it too. Second song in a row that mentions a soul. Mm-hmm. This is just bad lyricism. Come on, man. Two songs in a row mentions your soul or whatever. Come on, dude. This is kind of just like, I don't have much to say about the song. I think the song is probably the perfect version of Admiral before they probably broke up and started much more popular bands. But
yeah,
this seems like the first two songs melded together. It has the creativity of the first one, but it has kind of the more business-like direction of the second one combined. Mm-hmm. Like they are really hitting their stride with this song. So that's like, I think Fit is more my style, but Meter and Rule might be, you know, if you could have a definitive song out of a 6-song discography or whatever, their first 7-inch or their 7-song discography, you know, it might be Meter and Rule, because this is blends in everything. And like Scott said in the last song, I'm guessing he wrote the summary of the lyrics in the lyric sheet and was just like, I'm gonna just go, man. Whatever happens in that studio is what I'm putting down. I understand that because our last CD that we put out, I had to write the lyrics two years after we recorded it. I'm not a real fucking passionate lyric guy, so I just kind of made it up because who fucking cares? Like, whoever, right. no one ever questioned me on this, so I get it. But it kind of just like the lyrics, if you read along with this one, they just like they end and then there's like 37 more paragraphs worth of lyrics. Like, it just keeps going. It's like, damn, dude, did you run out of space? You made those pictures too big in the layout? Like what's going on? You could
have. There's a lot of room.
You had a lot of room to write these lyrics. So, outside of that, like I said, I think this is probably overall the best balanced song on the record. I don't know if it's the best song, but it's the most balanced song.
This song is where all the drama is hiding, man. This song is almost gothic or something. Like, you know, one of the reasons I never try, I don't try to meet anybody from who plays music. I don't try to meet famous people or meet musicians or be friends because I don't know how to speak music, but I want to ask. I still want to talk about it. I still want to. So this one would be like, that's so cool the way you like hold the one note and play the other note underneath it, like. And like the Chris Farley character or something like that. So awesome the way you do that. And I've been playing music for 30 years and what I just said is true. What I just said is serious. I don't know how to articulate whatever it is that makes this song sound a little bit goth. Because it makes it sound like one note is kind of ringing out a lot. Like he's kind of just like hanging on one note and then moving the other chords around. And it makes things sound a little spooky or a little gothic. And I also think sometimes he sounds like Danzig in this song. Like Misfits Danzig. It's just a few parts. It's like, man, they're kind of doing the Misfits in this too, man. They're doing a lot. So it's got like a lot of, so there's two guitarists, I think, in this band, right? And I think there is, or there's at least two guitar tracks and they started using them. A lot of hardcore bands and emo bands didn't do that. But it gets a little layered up. And then he does that hypnotic singing thing again, or repetitious, either shitty repetitious or hypnotic, depending on whether you like it or not. But it takes a while to get there because it's this totally unrelated part at the beginning of the song. There's like another song at the beginning that they play for a minute. It's a whole minute until you get to all this darkness and wind that's the rest of the song. I think this is the best thing on the album. I think it sounds like more like what they sound like in the video that I talked about before. The video's a little heavier. It doesn't sound like anything else directly I'm familiar with. So good job. They found a sound. It's probably just Fugazi. Like I like Fugazi, but I'm not an expert on Fugazi. They might just be ripping off Fugazi in this album because this song is a little bit more tricky. But it's got, you know, it's got tons of parts and every part gets a little better than the last one.
So yeah, a couple things. One is that they, as far as this record is concerned, they were just four guys. So like, probably multiple guitar tracks. Yeah. But secondly, I knew this record says it too, but I knew these guys were from Pennsylvania and I was so clueless that at least two or three of these guys ended up moving to DC. And I was like, that's crazy. Why would two or three of these guys end up moving to DC? It's because they're ripping all these bands off.
Yeah, that's where all the shit's happening, man. We got to get to DC.
Yeah, so I was like, that's such a weird move for, like, you know, these guys to separately move to DC. But now it makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think you just got to hang out at the Discord house and stuff.
Yeah.
If you moved to DC, they just let you come crash on the couch and then you got to be on the label.
But yeah, overall, my rating scale is you put this in the trash, you maybe pick it up in the bargain crate, you buy this for full price, or you buy this for collector's prices. I think I've mentioned in The Age of Reason, our first episode of the Hydra Head record, I put a lot of stock in getting early releases from kind of seminal record labels, even if time has forgot them. So I think the fact that this is Ebullition number two, and I think everybody has owned or owns that Downcast 7-inch, the first Ebullition record. That thing is like all over the fucking place. I think you go in any record store right now and it's going to be there. So that's a little less special, I think. So this number two, I think, is a little more special. So I put a lot of stock in that. I also think if you are into any of the bands we mentioned, either DC or Long Island, you should check this out because maybe this is like the missing link in between them. Or if you just you're a big fan of that one At the Drive-In song and you want to hear a very sloppy version of that intro, that there's also that. But I can't go pay full price for this, but this is definitely snag this if you see it for cheap. I think I picked this up for like $2 in a real record store, so that's pretty fucking cheap. So I would definitely snag this for cheap.
So you know, I don't want to undersell this if I have. I don't think I have, but I'm like a really big fan of Ian MacKaye singing. I don't care about anything else. I don't really think about his guitar playing that much, but I like his singing a lot. He, to me, is like the Freddie Mercury of bellowing like a trombone, just bellowing, just shouting like a drunken longshoreman. And, you know, like with some of his records that he put out, he was like already over it. He's like 19 or so. He's like an angry suicidal dad at 20 and just already sick of your shit immediately. And I'm like, man, this is so adult fed up, and not all of it. Some of it's pretty corny, but you know, just bellowing over sensitive music is maybe my favorite thing in the world. And I could see wanting to emulate that. So, you know, I could see the drive to be an admiral, but I personally hate when someone is like, you know, our band is like total Sabbath worship, man. We're like Sabbath worship. I hate that. Don't ever say anything like that. So I got to dock half a point because I could see these guys saying, we're like total DC worship, man. I could see them saying that in real life. And I don't know if they did or not, but I could see them saying it. So 0.5 knocked off for that. But, you know, most people don't get to be Crown Hate Ruin on their first day at work. You don't show up and you don't get to be Crown Hate Ruin. You got to do some time in the apprenticeship. You got to be an admiral. And so for your, you know, for your, like the first thing you do is like this. This is pretty rare to be, those are not their first record, but you know, for your first band to be this competent, pretty good. And I could definitely see myself wanting to listen to that last song. Like I could think about wanting to hear that. I'm going to crave it someday. and I'm old and dying. So to crave something I feel the life within me. So I'm going to go 4 dock worker hats out of 5, docking 1 half a hat for that stretched font. Cause that's a mistake. And you know it was a mistake.
So this would have almost been a perfect record if it wasn't just for some technical problems. That's it's pretty
clean
big
it
praise
up, guys.
From Scott.
Let's see.
Yeah. But there you go. That's this episode. Like I said, for 7-inch Club on YouTube, now Instagram, and our Gmail is also for 7-inch Club. I just purchased. We got a couple more records in the cycle, and then I just purchased a bunch more. And Chris, I believe it's Chris that recommended it. Yeah. Let me just make sure I got his name right. That's Chris, right? Yeah. Chris, yeah, he's the first, the second person, because Ryan recommended something, but he recommended a record, then he has a pretty good email to go along with it, and that should be in a few weeks. I'm very excited to do another request, so if you guys have a request, like I said, reach out to us, and, you know, something between 1990 and the mid-2000s that, had 1 7-inch, or you know, maybe a couple 7-inches, but outside
don't
of that, that's...
don't be shy, but also don't be a wimp. Like if you come to us and you say, "Guys, have you ever heard Black Flag?" and we say, "God, and man, we're not going to do a Black Flag record or something like that." Find a record that kind of like blossomed and died in the 7-inch pile, and or a band that you know that doesn't get the respect they're due. Find that one. I know you know one. I believe in you. You can get us that record. We've got a few recommendations from people, but you could have one too. We're in it for the long haul. There's a lot of records out there.
Yeah, man. There's a lot. And I mean, this batch I bought outside of that recommendation, I just went down. It's from Red Scroll Records in Connecticut. I just went down their Discogs list, and anything that had a cool cover that I never heard of from that time era, I just put in my cart. So there's no band too small. Yeah. If it's some fucking record that there's like 10 of, just let us know, because we're obviously not going for listens. So it doesn't matter if it's not a marquee name. We'll still talk about it. But that's the episode. So we'll see you next week, I guess.
Bye.